Welcome to this special edition of the Magnify podcast. I'm Laurel Day, president of Deseret Book Company, and I am so glad to be here having this conversation. I am one of the hundreds of thousands of young women in the 80s and early 90s who were impacted by the leadership of Ardith G. Kapp, who at the time was the Young Women General President. Many of you might not know that Ardith and her presidency and board launched the young women's theme that lasted nearly 40 years, the young women's values that many of you grew up with, the For the Strength of the Youth pamphlet, so many of these things that have influenced and impacted our lives. And when Ardith passed away on March 30th at the age of 93, I felt this need to make sure that we as women realize the legacy that she left for us, the things that she did for us, and the ways that our lives have been blessed because of her faithful discipleship. We at Deseret Book have a special connection to Ardith. She published 22 books with us, and she served on our board of directors and our editorial board for 31 years. So we love Ardith Kapp. There's so much to be gained by her life, and we won't cover it all in this podcast with Sherry Dew, who many of you love, and Sharon Larson, who you might know in her own church service, but is also Ardith's sister. So because of that, we're making her biography, Stand as a Witness, free on bookshelf for the whole month of April. And I guess I'm just kind of begging you to read it and to understand what a woman who lives her covenants and is trusted by the Lord, what that kind of life looks like. It can be a life we all live. And I hope today you're inspired to step up and to take your place in this beautiful kingdom and to magnify who you are meant to be.
We are women who love God and want to use our influence for good. No matter how ordinary we may feel, we each have a powerful purpose in the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is our time to step forward, to love fiercely, to lead boldly, to live happily, to fill the world with His light. Let's do it together on the Magnify Podcast.
Joining me for today's conversation to honor and amplify Ardith Kapp's life of influence are two women who are influential in their own right. Sherry Dew, who happens to be my boss, but thankfully also an important mentor in my life and dear friend, and came to all of our attention when she served as the second counselor in the Relief Society General Presidency from 1997 to 2002. She was also the president of Deseret Book Company from 2000 to 2013.
2002 to 2013.
And is now an executive vice president and chief content officer for Deseret Management Corporation, which is the parent company of Deseret Book, among other entities. Sherry, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And we have Sharon Larson. Sharon served as a second counselor in the Young Women General Presidency, also from 1997 to 2002. I feel like there are some stories there.
There are some stories.
Sharon is an educator and is also a hostess and event planner extraordinaire who I know travels sometimes with her own red carpet. That is the truth. And she also happens to have had the privilege of having Ardith Kapp as her older sister. So she has a special point of view on this remarkable woman that she'll bring to this conversation. We're so glad you're here with us, Sharon.
I am grateful for the privilege.
So thank you both for joining me today. I wish we had time actually to talk about the two of you serving together.
Oh, we have stories.
Just something?
It couldn't be on the air.
Because you were both second counselors, right? So I imagine you actually had a lot of assignments together. That's what I heard.
We should tell this one story. I think we could tell this one story as a recap. And that is, we did keep getting assigned to travel together and went a number of international trips. And every time we came back, we would make a report to the what was then the Priesthood Executive Council.
Yeah.
And at the time, the chair was President Oaks and then Elder Oaks and Elder Holland. And after about the third time we had come back and reported, Elder Holland said, they let you two go again? Haven't they figured out this isn't safe for the church?
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, you really get to know each other on an 18-hour airplane flight.
I bet. We will have to hear those stories another time. I ended up writing a little piece about Ardith for LDS Living. And in the article, I shared this, and we'll use this kind of to start our conversation today. I've heard and read so many sweet tributes to Ardith Kapp since her passing on March 30th.
Some have commented on her kind eyes, her sweet demeanor, and her cheerful optimism. And while all of those characterizations are accurate depictions, I feel the need to shout from the rooftops the truth about Ardeth Green Cap. And I think that's what I'm hoping today, is that we can just share some of the truths, because I don't want her to be remembered as just this sweet, kind, cheerful older woman that so many women knew her as. I knew her as a force and a leader and a significant mentor in my life. And I'm hoping we can share that with our audience today. So you both spoke at her funeral, and I'd love to talk about a couple of things that stood out to me there. The first thought that I had is Ardeth as a supporter. Again and again, it was shared how supportive Ardeth was of those she loved, how she cared about the one and made every person feel like they were her favorite. And I think you could see that just from the congregation that gathered to honor her life that day. Sharon, can we start with you on this? You talked about Ardeth being your best advocate, and I'd love to have you share a little bit about that. And would you mind also telling the story about the chocolate cake? Because I've not been able to stop thinking about it since the funeral.
Well, how long do you have?
As long as you need.
My sister Shirley and I were 10 and 11 years old when she got married. And she basically raised us because her mom was in the store. So I remember my friend invited me to go to the circus in Cardston, and that was just the greatest, most exotic thing that could happen in southern Alberta in the 50s. And I ran into the store to ask Mom if I could go, and Mom says, "Do you have your Saturday's work done?" I said, "No," and Artie had run behind me. Artie said, "Mom, please let her go. I'll do her work for her." She has been my advocate. So the chocolate cake, I had been teaching school and I got a paycheck. I had a paycheck, but I didn't have a car. So I said, "Artie, can I borrow your car? And because I have to go shopping." And Artie said, "Yes, but please have the car back by 4 o'clock because I have a meeting." I had a grand time, drove into the driveway, ran into the house. No Artie. I looked around. It was 5 o'clock. I was horrified. I couldn't find Artie. And here I was. And then I looked on the kitchen table. Here was big chocolate cake, my favorite, with a note. "Dear Sharon, I know you're having a good time. Don't worry about me. I found a ride. I love you." What kind of a sister is that? She was an advocate all the way.
We drove home and my husband turned to me and said, "How do you become the kind of person who gives a chocolate cake when you were let down?"
When you bought Chubb.
It's just such an amazing story. And I think so telling of who she was.
It does.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love that. Sherry, you talked about a letter that Ardeth wrote you when you were still adjusting to being a brand new young president of Deseret Book. And it had quite an impact on so many people who were at the funeral who were hearing. And I'd love for you to share the context of that letter and what you learned from Ardeth.
So about a month ago, I was going through a bunch of old files and came across this letter, which frankly I'd totally forgotten about until I saw it again. The context is that I was the fairly new president and CEO of Deseret Book Company. This letter was written in January of 2004. Deseret Book was undergoing all kinds of stress and disruption in its various businesses, Amazon and online and in-presence discounters had really affected the retail business. Desktop publishing was wrecking the publishing business. The whole digital world was exploding, and Deseret Book was in desperate need of a turnaround, which, of course, I didn't know anything about how to do a turnaround. Well, Ardeth was on Deseret Book's board of directors. So every month at board meetings, she was hearing the latest travails of this young and inexperienced CEO who didn't have a clue what she was doing. And here comes this letter. And she starts out the letter, she titles the letter "The St. Louis Arch." "Dear Sherry." And then she writes this history of the arch, how there were those who had this amazing vision of building this freestanding arch in St. Louis. It would be a gateway to the West. They didn't know how to engineer it. There were naysayers who said it couldn't be done. And in fact, she, about two-thirds of the way through the letter, she says how that there's a plaque on the arch that reads, "It couldn't be done, but they did it." Then, after she's told me this whole history, then she writes this. She says, I have a small replica of this arch with a plaque that sits on my desk today. There have been times over the years when a mental review of the construction of this great national monument, much of it built by night, gives me renewed patience, determination, commitment, confidence, and desire. Then the final paragraph says this. Under your leadership, you are building an arch to the future that can have more impact in the minds and hearts of people than even the St. Louis Arch. God bless you, dear friend, and let me know how I might assist in any way at any time. Maybe just carrying water to the builders. Whatever is needed. Love and prayers and faith. Artie. Hmm. When I stumbled across this letter just a few weeks ago, it unleashed a wave of emotion and a flood of memories, honestly, about many different things that she did at many different times to just encourage me, teach me, mentor me, help me, give me some things to think about for the future. Remarkable, really, when you think about it. There were a lot of people sitting around the Deseret Book Board of Directors, but she's the only one I got a letter from.
When I think about the tireless way that she did that for so many people, just as we were preparing for this, I realized I have a voicemail from January 20th of this year that I will save forever. From Ardith just checking in and wanted to see how I was doing. And she ended the voicemail with, you can do this. And I mean, she never got tired of it. Like, at some point, don't you get tired of being that nice? But she just didn't. She just was tireless in her support of people.
She was a teacher.
She
was by nature a teacher.
She was.
Right?
Yeah.
From a pulpit or one-on-one, that was a thing that she did and did really, really well.
Yeah, I love that. That's well said. One of the other things that struck me watching her in her marriage, but also that came up in her funeral, is Ardith as a partner. She and Heber, I just think it's one of the sweetest love stories. Sherry, I'm wondering if you would start here. You were able to spend time with Ardith and Heber. I'd love to know what struck you about their relationship. And could you share an experience that you had with the two of them?
I'm sure Sharon knows way more about this than I do. But one experience that stands out was we went, Sharon and I and Wendy then Watson. Right?
She wasn't
married yet to then elder, now President Nelson. And a couple of other friends. And we all went to Cardston. When Artie was the matron and Heber was the president of the temple. And
it was Artie's 70th birthday.
For her 70th birthday, we went up and we had a little celebration, took the birthday party to her. And I still remember that we had the privilege, I think it was on the Sabbath, that the president of the temple, Heber Kapp, took us over after we'd gone to church. Do you remember? Took us over to the temple. And we actually got to go into the temple and sit in one of the ceiling rooms. I think it was one of the ceiling rooms.
Yeah.
And just talk about the temple.
Wow.
And watching Heber and Artie interact in that, again, teaching situation was, to me, that's where and how Ardith just shined. She always shined. As a teacher. And we had this chance to sit there and talk about things we wondered about. And they both just kind of interplayed in leading a discussion with us. That's maybe my favorite treasured memory of the two of them.
Oh, what a treasure.
Remarkable experience.
They really were equally yoked. I mean, even their office and their home, the two exact same desks, like they were equally yoked. And I love that. Yeah. I had the chance to be, this would have been in my 30s, and I was there on several Sundays, and Ardith let me read a binder of love letters that she and Heber had written to each other that she had saved. And I just, in fact, you can read many of those love letters in her biography I think it's a whole chapter in her biography because they wrote so often together. I'm just wondering, Sharon, if you can highlight for us a bit, like their early relationship and what you learned about marriage by watching them. You spent so much time with them as a married couple.
I did. At first, he came to our home. Our dad was the bishop, and he was just one of the missionaries.
In Glenwood,
the big town of 250 people. And Artie was smitten right then, and she would talk about Cap, and he took a picture of our family. And so Artie took it upon herself to write him back and thank him for the picture that he took. And then we know the rest of that story. And they became engaged. And so she
after his mission.
Pardon me?
I'm just clarifying. After his mission, they became engaged.
Oh, yeah.
He came home.
He came home from his mission, honorably released. Artie was at BY High School. And then they could continue their relationship. And they became engaged. So then Artie came up home to Canada, getting ready for the wedding. And I remember she sat Shirley and I down and she said, "Now, we do not any longer call him Cap." And we said, "Well, what do we call him?" She said, "Well, his name is Heber." We said, "Heber? Yes, you call him Heber. And he is going to be in our family." So that was the deal. Then I remember he came up and he brought her home to our home from something. I don't remember. I looked out the kitchen window. They were kissing. I said, "Shirley, come and look. They're kissing." We were so excited. We were 10 and 11 years old. So this was exciting for us. Then every summer, we would come down to the States for a month of the summer. And Artie and Heber had jobs. But Artie taught us how to iron shirts. So while they were working, Shirley and I practiced ironing shirts.
That's so great.
And they had movies in town. I mean, we never had movies. It was so sophisticated coming to the States. Mom gave Artie some money to buy us school clothes. So Artie took us shopping. She could spread money further than anybody I know. We had beautiful clothes from the States. So when we went home, we put on a fashion show for Heber. He was so patient having all these little sisters-in-law. But Artie and Heber were a team. They supported each other totally, encouraged each other. When she was asked to give so many talks, Heber would say, "Think about missionaries having to go door to door. You get to have a whole congregation. You go give that talk." She probably would not have written her first book without his encouragement. They were just a good team. All the parenting skills. One time, Shirley and I were down there with them, and we were arguing. And Shirley pouted. Heber said, "Shirley, how long are you going to pout? Do I need a calendar or a clock?" And Shirley said she realized her attitude was her choice. They were just good with people and so kind to us.
Again, teaching, like Sherry mentioned. I mean, they were just always looking for...
It was just a natural thing.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Another highlight for me from the funeral was Ardith as a devoted disciple. And Sharon, maybe you can talk about this a little. Was Ardith always Ardith? I'm just so curious. Like, did she come that way? What do you recall about her growing up that helped her become the disciple we all came to know?
We lived in a privileged environment. Probably people wouldn't think it was that privileged. We had mail come three times a week, a movie on Thursdays, Mutual Tuesday and Thursday. I mean, we had a great life. Everywhere we went, we heard the same values. There was no confusion. Mm. We lived in a town of our aunts and uncles. And the teachers, our school teacher was our primary teacher. The stake president in Cardston owned the movie theater. So he chose the movie he brought out each time. So there was no mix-up about what mattered. And I think that gave Artie a security of her identity, of who she was and what mattered most in her life. So you say, was she always Artie? She was always that way, because that's how you live in a little town. And when you live in a little town, and Sherry knows about this, you do everything. She was the majorette in the band. Our brother was in the band. Our aunts and uncles and cousins were in the band. You spoke at church. You did everything. And she just grew up with that identity and confidence in the values that were there. No confusion.
I love the notion that it gave her, you said, the security of her identity. Yeah. And when I think of then what she went on to do for young women with the young woman's theme and helping us understand our divine nature, that just, it clicks. That makes so much sense.
It was such a huge, big deal to her identity.
Well, God bless Glenwood, Alberta. That just sounds idyllic. Sherry, you talk a lot about the power of covenant-keeping women, and you talked about Ardith's deep devotion to the Savior when you spoke at her funeral, and I've heard you say that about Ardith before. What do you see as the connection between covenant-keeping and devoted discipleship, and how did you witness that in Ardith? And I guess I'd love to know what takeaway you would have for women who are striving to be more devoted disciples of Jesus Christ.
Well, it feels to me like it's one eternal round, if you will. The more you keep your covenants, the more devoted you become. And the more devoted you feel, the more you're absolutely determined to keep your covenants. And somewhere in her life, and I think Sharon's really explained it to us, somewhere in her life, that just became her pattern. And then, you know, we all come to this earth with certain gifts and talents and I think jobs to be done, if you will. We use Clayton Christensen's language, things that we have been prepared to do premortally. And clearly, Artie was prepared to do a great work. And it was because she was absolutely devoted to the Lord, which made her devoted and loyal to his prophets, that put her in a position to have the kind of influence she had. You know, I drove away from the funeral saying, and I always do this, I drive away from everything I ever speak at thinking, oh, I wish I'd said this. Why didn't I say that? But the thing I wish I had said that I think would have tied it together better is that because she was devoted to the Lord and to his prophets, the Lord knew he could trust her. Mm-hmm. And when the Lord knows he can, believe me, the Lord trusted Ardith Gap. And when the Lord knows he can trust you, he both opens doors for you and he helps you open doors. Mm. And I think that if I were going to summarize what she was able to do, she was the means, doors opened for her, but she also opened some doors with the Lord's help because he trusted where she was going. He trusted where she was taking the young women. He trusted that she could be a force for good and a champion of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. I think it all works together. But it starts with making covenants and then keeping them. And the more you keep doing that, the more it becomes a very virtuous cycle of obedience, covenant keeping, greater devotion, more covenant keeping, more wanting to strictly keep your covenants, and so forth. That's a very virtuous cycle.
Well, and one of the hallmarks of that cycle that you're talking about seems to be the temple, which we just heard about so much in General Conference, of course, and President Nelson's plea to us. Am I right, though, that I think it's right that Ardith went every Friday?
Oh.
Like she was there every Friday up until recently, right?
Ralph got names for her. He got one endowment, 5 initiatories, and 5 ceilings every Friday. So she had a total of 1,100 friends waiting for her on the other side.
And
since COVID.
That's amazing.
And for all of those wondering, how did she get to do initiatory every week? I can only get an appointment every 4 months. Well, she was special. Let's just say she was special.
She was special. There was a sealer there who covered it for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect when you go that often, you can just walk right in.
I go that often. I don't just walk right in. No, she had somebody opening doors.
Opening doors.
That's it.
Well, speaking of opening doors and trusted, I would love to now transition to Ardith as a leader. Ardith clearly knew, and you read this in the biography, but she knew her presidency and her board had been called for a really critical time. And she seemed to have a keen understanding of the unique needs of young women and the importance of making sure that they understood their identity, like you mentioned earlier, Sharon, but also their purpose and their relevance within the church. Her biography recalls a presentation that her presidency made to church leaders early on in her service after they'd been planning and praying about what young women need. And I want to share part of this directly from her biography because I think it's so powerful. As Ardith began the presentation, she said boldly, Brethren, if you want to know about young men, you can hear about them at the annual Priesthood Restoration Commemoration. If you want to know about young men, you can attend their annual Scouting Conference. Then she said, but if you want to know about young women, the satellite screens are dark and the message vague. She then reviewed statistics showing the attendance of young women at church meetings, that it was declining. She spoke about the needs of young women. And keep in mind, this would have been in the 80s. Yeah. She explained that young women needed a clear sense of their true identity. They also needed additional recognition, which would help them and motivate them and reinforce them in their righteousness. They would have a clear purpose and a sense of contributing to the mission of the church. She then presented the program that she and her board and presidency had been working on. And as she concluded the presentation, she asked directly, in what areas do you share our concerns about young women? Are our plans for meeting their needs acceptable? Do we have your approval to proceed with finalizing these recommendations? The biography states that when Ardith finished the presentation, President Ezra Taft Benson, who was then a member of the Quorum of the Twelve, said, "Brethren, I think we should stand in acknowledgement that this is acceptable to the Lord." Then, just as they were preparing to leave, one of the brethren said, "Sisters, today you have not only opened our ears, but also our hearts." Makes me think of what you said, Sherry, about the Lord opening doors. And I read that and I think hearts and ears were opened. And as a result, a powerful program for young women that absolutely influenced in ways I can't even express my life and my experience as a woman in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And then it maintained its relevance for almost 40 years. It's astounding to me what they were able to do during their presidency and what was implemented during her service. So I guess my question is, you both have served in church leadership, and I'd love for you to share your thoughts about Ardith as an exemplar of female leadership in the church and the unique position she held and the unique impact she had.
Boy, where would you start? Ardith was simply an iconic leader. She had gifts of expression, just what you outlined for us just there, talking about how she laid out the need. She basically gave the case for change, why there needed to be change, and she did it in a way that the brethren could hear it. And one of the things I said the other day at the funeral that I believe with my whole heart is that she, because the Lord trusted her and the brethren trusted her, they both knew that she was absolutely all in when it comes to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But she was willing to stand up and say, in essence, Houston, we have a problem. We have some issues here. Let us show it to you. And by the way, we haven't come with just problems. We've come with a solution. She was a model of that, of not just going in and whining and saying, oh, we have all these problems and nobody listens to us and the satellite screens are dark. No, we do have a problem and we have prayerfully, thoughtfully brought a solution for your consideration. I think she was a master at rallying a team to develop. She wouldn't say that every idea that she presented was hers. She rallied a team to create those ideas and then knew how to express it. She did have powers of persuasion and gifts of expression that allowed her to say to senior leaders of the church at the time what needed to be said to them about the young women. And so her powers of expression combined with her loyalty and her devotion to trying to make things better rather than stir everybody up, but to make things better, that was a powerful combination.
And one thing that I've heard you talk about, Sherry, that just strikes me as I read her biography, but particularly this experience, was her motives. Mm-hmm. They knew they could trust her motives being mm-hmm. about the needs of the church and not about her. She didn't set out to be an iconic leader.
No, she just, in fact, she dealt with her own insecurities and she had plenty of them.
Yeah, she did.
And her sister can talk about that better than I can, but I saw them too. I mean, she was always dealing with her insecurities, but she was bold in her devotion to the Lord mm-hmm. and bold in her devotion to the cause. And she did have verbal gifts.
Yes.
That allowed her, whether she was speaking to you one-on-one, sitting in her living room, she could inspire you, or she could stand at a pulpit talking to a worldwide audience and inspire that audience. So let's be clear to acknowledge the Lord gave her some gifts, and one of those gifts was the ability to express herself. She shined at that pretty much in any situation.
And so I think about, I go back to the combination of our mom and dad. Our dad had a gift of being a great listener, and he could ask a question and you'd find yourself opening up your whole soul to him. And mom had the courage and determination and smarts. During the Depression, she started a store at dad's suggestion because the farm was failing. And she ran that store, and the combination of mom's social abilities and determination and dad's abilities to ask and listen, I see in Artie as she worked with people, as she was a leader. One story I remember particularly, she honored the priesthood. I think, Sherry, you'd say she was kind of a pioneer with opening the doors for the sisters in the leadership of the church. And she honored the priesthood from the very beginning of her life. We had a perfect father for us. And so she, as Sherry said, because of that, they could trust her. So when Artie was young woman president, they felt they needed to update the standards for the church.
For the youth of the church, right?
For the youth of the church. Because the standards book at the time said something about don't chew gum.
And don't go outside with curlers in your hair.
Exactly.
I remember.
And so Artie thought, maybe there's something more that we can teach the youth. So they worked very hard in preparing this standards book. And it just did not seem to go. But she had it ready whenever. Well, then she got called to President Monson's office. President Monson wanted to let her know they were going to call Sister Jack, who was her counselor, to be the president of the Relief Society. And so they talked about that, and then Artie got ready to go. And President Monson said, Sister Cap, do you have anything else you want to talk to me about? She said, well, yes, as a matter of fact. And she happened to have the outline for the standards book for the youth. And President Monson then said, we're going to bring this to General Conference. And I think General Conference was just a few weeks away. But her point was...
And that became for the strength of youth, right?
Exactly.
That became for the first version of the
first version.
For the
yes.
strength
yeah.
of youth.
Yeah. And Artie said, be prepared. The timing may not be when you think it's right. Then as Sherry said, her favorite scripture was trust in the Lord with all your heart. And the brethren trusted her, and she trusted them.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. I was relating to Sherry after Artie's passing, just the things that she had taught me when I started to have some leadership opportunities at work. And the piece that is like indelibly imprinted in my head is that story, and be prepared. And as you mentioned, Sherry, the Lord will open doors when he knows he can trust you to not just take the opportunity, but also do his will. He'll open those doors for you.
Yeah, she was classic in that, and would she certainly counseled me, and I think she has countless number of people to just say, look, just because you have a great idea doesn't mean it's time. It may be a slightly different time when that can come to fruition, but be ready. Because when the door opens, you need to be ready to walk through it right then, because the door may not stay open very long. And it might be, as in this case, the span of one meeting.
Yeah.
She had to walk through it right then, but she was ready. To me, it's a classic example of leadership.
It's remarkable.
And of responding to revelation, right?
Yes.
And not getting depressed if this brilliant idea you have doesn't go forward on the first stroke of the brush.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Artie's ripple effect. One of the things that has struck me and that was driven home at the funeral was the ripple effect of her life. She and I talked a few times about the fact that she was not privileged with motherhood in this life, but that the Lord gave her hundreds of thousands of daughters. Yeah. And any of us who were lucky enough to be young women while she served, we know we were one of her girls.
You were.
And we still feel that. She gave us, I think, perhaps the greatest gift that she could have given us. And it's an understanding of our identity as daughters of God that you mentioned she gained early on, and that and wanted to instill in us a sense of our unique mission in life, but also in this church and in the world. She called us to stand as witnesses, and we heard the call and the impact on generations. When I think about it, of those, I mean, through the 8 years of her presidency, it had to have been nearly a million young women that would have gone through, mm-hmm. if my math is right. And when I think about now the influence of those women on their marriages and their children and in their callings and in their wards, it's tens of millions of people who have been impacted because of what she gave us. I just am kind of astounded by that. And the thing that I've been thinking about since her funeral is, how do I best honor her legacy and that influence and what she instilled in all of us? And so I guess my question to both of you is, what do you wish women in the church understood about their identity and purpose today? And how can we better live that in a way to honor this kind of legacy that Ardith left for us?
I think Ardith really understood that Christ was the greatest advocate for women ever. She really walked the talk of trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not unto your own understanding, but in all thy ways acknowledge him. As you mentioned, without the children, that broke her heart. But she honestly trusted in the Lord, and that Jesus Christ was her advocate, is her advocate from beginning to end. And she felt if women understood their temple covenants, they would not have 1 second of feeling inferior. That no one in the world comes into the world without a woman. I mean, how important is that? And I think Artie would shout from the rooftops, the Lord is your advocate. Just trust him.
I love what Sharon just said. I agree with all of it. And I think there's also a practical element to this that maybe I'll mention because of what Sharon just said. I think Ardith gained, I'm sure this was acquired over time, that she gained an appreciation for the fact that, as President Nelson has said repeatedly, the restoration's ongoing. And every problem and every wrinkle doesn't get ironed out like today. And I think that she could see that the restoration is line upon line. And so she was willing to work within the structure, and she learned how to work within the structure, which started with her devotion to the Lord and her loyalty to the senior leaders of the church, saying, I'm not going to try to tell them how to do their job. I'm going to say, how can I magnify the opportunity that's been given to me and raise my voice in every meeting and in every setting that I have the chance to raise it to try to help the line upon line process to continue to happen. And that's how it happens in this church. You can knock down on doors. Somebody, one of the things that she told me, again, if I go through the many mentoring moments, one thing she told me one day was, Sherry, you can't pound down a door at the church. It doesn't work. But if you have something to say and something meaningful to contribute, be ready. Because as we've said earlier, the door will open. And when it opens, you better walk through right then. And I think she's somewhere, I don't know how she got it, where she, did somebody teach her or did she just figure it out? But don't go over there trying to say you're going to pound down the door and tell prophets, seers, and revelators, I got a few things you need to know. I've actually never seen that work.
Do you know what she always said, though? When another program came up after Young Women, she said, I believe in continuing revelation. And she really did.
She really did, mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's line upon line. So she learned how to work within the structure. And if I just look back at the span of my life, so many things have happened. For example, since Sharon and I served
the same time.
Same time, yeah. And a ton of things have happened since we were released. And while we were serving, things happened that those before us said, oh, you're getting privileges we didn't have before. So these things continue to happen. And I think artists seem to have an instinctive understanding of how it works and how to fit in and have raise her voice. She was no shrinking violet.
No.
Raise her voice and raise it strongly, but do it inside of the structure of how the Lord runs and operates his church. She was, I don't know where she got that. You learn some things just by experience, but some of the key things that have helped me, she actually taught me and said, Sherry, you need to understand this. You need to understand this. You need to understand this. I didn't have to figure out some of those things myself because she already taught me.
Well, and also how the Lord works with us, right? He gave her revelation for her stewardship, and then he opened the door
in her time
and opened the door for her to then step forward. And he's working with people. He's working with humans at the end of the day.
Yes.
And some of that's important. I think that is such powerful perspective, Sherry, for each of us in our own stewardships and in our own spaces. There's so much more we can do than we think we can do.
Mm-hmm. The other part, I think, Artie was not building her own kingdom. So when another idea came along, when it's continuing revelation, she is right there behind it.
I love that. I love this conversation. I think we could talk all day about her, and we still need to hear more stories about the two of you. But I would just love to end with this. I was 13 years old sitting in a stake center in Louisville, Kentucky on November 10th, 1985 for the first ever Young Women's Broadcast. And truly, it is not an overstatement to say that was probably as close to like a born again experience I had ever had. She called us to something. I felt it. And I wish I had my journal here to recap what I said. But so much of what she said then feels so relevant and important today. And I actually went and found they have an old video recording on YouTube of the satellite broadcast. And I just had a flood of memories this week rewatching it. But I'd love to conclude with these words of Ardith, because it represents to me what we as a community of covenant-keeping women can do and can be now as we heed current prophetic calls. She said this. She said, young women, and I'm going to say women. To every woman throughout the entire church, I see the crest of a great wave forming. I see a wave forming that will move across the earth, reaching every continent and every shore. I call upon you to stand with me to prepare to take your place in a great forward movement among the women of the church, a movement of renewed commitment, a movement in which you are destined to shape history and participate in the fulfillment of prophecy. I can hear a growing chorus of women's voices reaching across the land and across the water and heavenward, responding to the call for righteous young women. Who will stand up and lead out in defense of the gospel of Jesus Christ and stand as a witness for Christ at all times and in all places? We invite you to add your commitment to thousands of others in the united chorus, I will, send me. And with that, Artie, we love you. Thank you for your selfless and tireless work to build the kingdom of God on earth. We will carry on the legacy that you laid out. And Sharon and Sherry, I can't thank you enough for being willing to have this conversation today and for sharing what you've shared. We're all better for it. And I'm just excited to let us all go forth and step into our calls as women and daughters of God and do a little bit better. Try a little harder to be a little better, right?
Better.
That was what Artie said every day. We love you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being with us for this conversation today. I hope that you have been inspired by this remarkable life. And just as a reminder, we've made her biography, Stand as a Witness, available for free on Bookshelf. You can download it now at DeseretBook.com during the month of April.